pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning and welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Thursday morning to you. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line and I will respond if it is a, well, I mostly respond to everything. Sometimes I get sent videos and things like that that are not really easy to respond to. But anyway, give it a shot. 251-343-0106. Coming up on today's program, State Representative Susan DuBose, a very central figure in this library discussion, debate, controversy here in the state. I want to talk to her about that. And, you know, now that the Alabama Public Library Service is parting ways with the American Library Association, will what needs to be done here? What are, if any, legislative remedies? We can talk about that with her. Maybe some other things going on in the Alabama legislature coming up in 2024. Also, our buddy Dave Mallory, also a noted Georgia Bulldog fan, a political consultant, right in his backyard, kind of a weird second congressional district situation. Now, Dick Brubaker is supposed to qualify this morning. I had him on the Montgomery show yesterday, and we talked about that. So we're starting to see some candidates. An additional candidate on the Democrat side, State Representative Jeremy Gray. I don't know much about him. He was the guy who got the yoga ban lifted in Alabama. But he has entered the contest for the Democrat nomination, for those of you in the 2nd Congressional District. So, like I said, just this Frankenstein of a district, and you're going to have all kinds of different geographic loyalties. Waiting to see if there will be a potential Republican surprise. Because so far, there's a lawyer. She announced yesterday that she was going to, those of you originally or didn't know Monroe County, Beatrice may know this lady, but I have to look her name up. Anyway, that was an additional. Let's see, Caroline Dobson, attorney practices law in Montgomery. She has thrown her hat into the ring for the Republican nod. She was actually the first candidate. I'm sure we'll have all these people on over time. Expect to start seeing that to kind of wrap up here. We're 8 days away for qualifying, and I think we will get the finishing touches on that in really short order. Here soon. But anyway, Dave Mallory and I will talk about that in the 10 o'clock hour. Also, coming up on the program, Mullen County Republican Party Chairman Patrick McWilliams. So we do every Thursday. We'll talk Israel, Gaza, the slow roll here, what's going to happen next. It doesn't seem like it just seems very slow rolling. And maybe that's by design. I don't know. But Patrick and I will get into that. We'll talk a little local politics as well. So a lot to get into there. Make sure you stick around for that. A big news last night, at least statewide, I think, is there was a handful of Republican lawmakers, of Republican senators, who tried to end Tommy Tuberville's holds on the military confirmations. The usual suspects, Lindsey Graham, who he had his moment from about Kavanaugh through the 2022 election, and then now he's back to being Lindsey Graham. Todd Young of Indiana, Mitt Romney of Utah, or is it Massachusetts? I never can remember. Dan Sullivan of Alaska, not to be confused with Sean Sullivan, and Joni Ernst, the darling sweetheart of Senate Republicans of Iowa. They kind of came out, lined up all against Tommy Tuberville. That still wasn't enough. It still wasn't enough for Coach to say they couldn't change the rule. They really tried to come out against him, and he stood his ground. So you have five Republican lawmakers, as I just mentioned, go join forces with Democrats because they think confirming these military appointments that Biden has put forth is more important than standing their ground on abortion. Now, some of you probably agree with them that that this whole abortion thing is silly. We're a different society now. We're more secular. That it's not really about the value of human life because it's just a clump of cells. But yeah, historically, it's Republican orthodoxy, conservative orthodoxy, to protect the rights of the unborn. And we seem to be ceding ground on entitlements. We seem to be ceding ground on a lot of personal privacy, liberty questions. They held a gun to our head on marriage. Anybody who supports traditional marriage and is against same-sex marriage is akin to something like Roy Moore or whatever. So they got that. I mean, what is left? Well, let's go after the rights of the unborn. And Tommy Tuberville, good for him for sticking with this. This is such an important fight, I think. Because what the Biden administration is doing, they're breaking the law. The Congress decided a long time ago that federal money would go toward abortion. Well, it's not really going toward abortion. It's just going toward travel expenses and paid military leave for an abortion. Why did we need this new policy? Oh, well, you know, stupid states like Alabama ban abortion. Why is abortion, you guys who served know all the exceptions are how do you get leave in the military when you're serving, when you're active duty? And what this policy is it pays for transportation and gives you paid leave to go have this procedure or to go have an elective on-demand abortion, whatever you want to call it. For the sake of this argument, we'll call it abortion. So anyway, what else does the military give you that sort of benefit for? I mean, is there anything else? So why is abortion put on this pedestal by the Biden administration, by the Biden Pentagon? And I think that's the question Tommy Tuberville's trying to figure out. And they're not giving him like a real answer here. So he's like, well, you know, here's my power as a United States senator. And I think for the most part, people in Alabama have his back. They have not been able to separate Coach and most of the Republican voters in this state. Now, I don't know what the end game is here. We'll probably have to wait till the next president before anyone is confirmed. Because the Pentagon's, the Biden administration is not going to back off. And they'll be damned if they back off to this dumb redneck football coach from Alabama, or he's really from Arkansas, I guess. But whatever, you get the point. So I think that's a significant development. The Republicans start turning on Tuberville. But I also noticed this, a lot of backlash. Heritage, the Federalist. A lot of these really kind of conservative institutions are siding with Tommy Tuberville over the fearsome fivesome, we could call them. The fearsome fivesome consisting of Lindsey Graham, Todd Young, Mitt Romney, Dan Sullivan, and Joni Ernst. Here's a story for you. How excited are you? Remember we had this long discussion all beginning of the year during the legislative session about the tax rebate, Governor Ivey's big tax rebate? Well, here in about a month, guys, you're going to be into cash. $150 for single filers and $300 for married filers. They're going to be sending those out beginning on December 1st. And Governor Ivey's very excited for this, because this is going to go a long way in helping you guys through the tough times that are underway. This is the quote from Governor Ivey. She sent out in a statement kind of advertising this development. From the very beginning, it has been my belief that it's the responsibility of government to be good stewards of the taxpayer dollars while actively looking for ways to support citizens through tough times. Our country is in the midst of tough times, and Alabama families from all walks of life, I sound more like the Alabama Appleseed guy, don't I, are unfortunately seeing their paychecks aren't going as far as they once did. Thanks to our unwavering commitment to fiscal responsibility, one-time tax rebates will be with our hardworking Alabamians in time for the holidays. And in the meantime, we will be building a $1 billion boondoggle road out in the middle of Marengo County and a prison in Elmore County that costs twice as much as we thought it was. Roll Tide and War Eagle. 251-343-0106 if you want to get in touch with the show. What are you going to do with your $150 or $300 for some of you? Let me know. That's always like a favorite kind of radio gimmick. It's tax rebate time. When are you going to spend your big cash? And people call in, well, I'm going to get my transmission fixed or something, or I'm going down to Panama City Beach. I haven't really talked about this one yet, and I can't help but ignore this story. 1819 News, 1819news.com. There's a mayor in East Alabama, a place called Smith Station. Some of you may know where it is, halfway between Phoenix City and Opelika on 280 there. He has some peculiar hobbies in his spare time. And it kind of landed on our radar. I think it's an interesting news story for sure. What's going on here? I mean, we can get into that later on in the program. But I mean, he dresses up as a woman and takes pictures and puts them on the internet and writes a very erotic fiction that he posts on the internet. Which maybe that's a problem. Maybe it is. Isn't a problem for him as a mayor? However, he's also a Baptist preacher. First Baptist Church in Phoenix City, Alabama. That's on the Georgia line there. And, the cross-dressing Baptist preacher, who also is a mayor, seems like a very interesting story to me. But anyway, I digress. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Take this cowboy's hat.
Now, if your leather jacket means to you what this hat means to me,
promise me, son, not to do the things I've done. Walk away from trouble if you can. Now, it won't mean you're weak if you turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Thursday morning. Man, today's kind of only 5 hours and 36 minutes of live radio left for me, consecutive live radio today. The days are all blending together, as I tend to do. But anyway, 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the show? Hit us up on the text line. Let's see. We got a bunch of texts. You guys really liked this morning's monologue. Let's kick it off here. Leo says, good morning, Jeff. Well, good morning, Leo. Call it what it is. An abortion vacation paid for by the taxpayers. It does seem like an abortion vacation. Let's see here. Damn Yankee says the red football coach from Alabama is the best senator in the swamp. Yeah, I would probably agree with that. I have some favorites. I like Holly. I like Vance. I don't know yet. Katie's okay. But Tuberville's kind of leading the pack here. I just, you know, that town just eats people alive. And you have to wonder how much longer. I mean, Tuberville's a wealthy guy. How much longer does he really want to put up with that idiocracy that, you know, these guys like Lindsey Graham, do they really care about military families? Or maybe he's plotting the next war in Ukraine. I don't know. Damn Yankee says, quite possibly the most expensive prison in U.S. history, talking about the Elmore County facility. Yeah, I don't know. $1 billion for a prison? I don't know what the going freight on a prison is these days. I haven't been in the market for a prison, but some of you may have been. Who wants to be a prisoner? You can win your own $1 billion prison. Tim, Jeff, you could probably get torn out of the frame on $150. Tim, we must prioritize here. This will go in a savings account and accumulate interest. Let's see here. Dirt Digger says, Trump, Tuberville 2024. Christian win, not devil Democrats or demons. And it says he's going to buy 4 bags of groceries with his state check, exclamation point. Tommy Tuberville, guys, if Trump is president, this is a tough one, if he will or not. I have no idea what's going to happen in the presidential election. Usually we have a pretty good idea. It's like, oh, this one's not going to go our way. But Trump's president, coach is heading to the executive branch, I think. But who knows? Bonesaw, one of my favorite texters. Jeff, can you please talk at exit every time you read my messages? No, I can't do that. That being said, a trick-or-treater last night told me to go blank myself for giving out cheap candy. No, Bonesaw, you deserve a trick. I'm coming to roll your house tonight, Bonesaw. I know, I'm going to find where you live. I think I know who you are. Somewhere in my Facebook messages. Randy writes this. Good morning, Jeff. If I sold you a widget for $400, oh boy, math problem, and you paid my invoice, and later I thought I overcharged you $300 and decided to do the right thing to give you $300 back, I would feel embarrassed, regretful, and apologetic for the mistake. Why does Granny Ivy feel she is doing us some wonderful favor and expect us to say thank you? Well, it took an act of the legislature, Randy. It wasn't really Governor Ivy. The legislature said, hey, we got all this extra money, and here you can have some of it back because it's your money. And that's the way that played out. Governor Ivy wanted you to have a bigger rebate, but they decided to go for the grocery tax. Let's get a break in here. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the Ascension Technologies text line. Still to come, Dave Mallory, friend of mine, political consultant, in about an hour. And then the chairman of the Baldwin County Republican Party, our friend, Chairman McWilliams, Patrick McWilliams, in the 11 o'clock hour. So stay tuned for that. But joining us now, it is my pleasure to introduce my next guest. She represents kind of near where I grew up, but North Shelby County State Representative Susan DuBose on the line with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for making time. I appreciate you coming on to talk to our audience down here. Let's kick it off here. There's kind of a development about last weekend. Nancy Pack, in a response to Governor Ivey, says it's her attention to part ways with the American Library Association. She's the head of the Alabama Public Library Service. And, I mean, that seems like the momentum's kind of starting to line up for the cause here to me.
You know, I think so. And I'm very appreciative to Dr. Pack. She and Ivy went back and forth with a couple of letters, and I think they've come to a really good place of compromise. It's very fair, still allows our local libraries to have control of as they should. But I think that a really good case was made for Alabama libraries not being involved with the American Library Association anymore. And so, Dr. Pack has said that she is not going to renew the membership for the Alabama Public Library System to continue to be a member of the American Library System. So that's great. Now, that will still allow local libraries to make that decision, but she has set forth the stage. She's made that recommendation, and there will be no more funds going to the American Library Association. $38,000 over the last 4 years. Of state money did go to the American Library Association just from the Alabama Public Library System, not counting what local libraries may have paid into the system. So I'm happy about that. Dr. Pack has also said she's going to send a letter to the American Library Association recommending that Emily Dobrinsky, the Marxist president, be impeached. So I was very happy to hear that. That was not even recommended by Governor Ivey. That's a bonus. Thank you, Dr. Pack. I think that's wise, and it sets Alabama a leader in making that statement. So really, really proud of that. And there's a couple of other really, really important things. A couple of changes to the guidelines for our library policy to receive state funds. So we've always had administrative code for our libraries and things they needed to comply with to receive state funds. And there's two new ones that are going to be added, which I think are fabulous. So the physical location relocation of sexually explicit material can be deemed appropriate for children or youth sections and not be considered censorship. So this rule allows libraries to relocate inappropriate books in a children's section. Previously, they'd always told us that was censorship. So we're making it clear that is not censorship. And the other new guideline, which I think is great, is that materials promoted or displayed by a local library must be approved in advance by the local library board. So that gives the public the opportunity to have input on any displays or materials that will be actively promoted to children. So I think those are two great rules that will be added to our Alabama code in order for local libraries to receive state funds.
During this whole saga, Representative, I think the thing that kind of struck me is, like, I never would have had this on my bingo card that and we're finding it to be an even more of a phenomenon that, number one, just kind of the progressive or liberal or whatever you want to call it impulse inside the small town public library.
Yes.
But right. the intransigence of local governments, I mean, some are trying to fight back. Just get this mayor in Ozark. But generally speaking, like a lot of these city councils, a lot of these county commissions, they don't want anything to do with this controversy, and they're terrified of it, and they're steering clear of it. And I like this just seems like low-hanging fruit to me for them, but apparently there's a lot more to it than I had expected.
Well, you know, people don't like being called liars, or they don't like being called transphobic, or all sorts of names. When you stand up for the truth, sometimes you get attacked by the other side. And a lot of people don't want to face that. But the fact of the matter, it's up to our local library boards. And these boards are appointed, for the most part, by cities, municipality leaders, and county government. So counties and cities need to make sure they are appointing good people to be on these boards. It's very, very important. And we've just been sort of asleep and not realizing what has been going on for a long time in our local libraries. And the public is becoming aware of it. There will be continued pressure on state and local leaders and library boards to make sure the materials are appropriate. I don't think that's a lot to ask. I don't think that's hurting anyone's individual liberties. I mean, you hear this fight back. Oh, that's, you know, this is a free country and, you know, individual liberty should be protected. And this is book banning, you know, which is that's just crazy town. We have always protected our children. It has never been considered censorship to protect children. You know, we don't let children go to certain movies or get certain video games. They all have age limits on it. So since when is having age appropriate books in a children's section hurting someone's individual liberties or considered book banning? That is crazy town. It's called protecting our children. If parents want to get those books for those children, they can. They will be available. You could order them by Amazon. They'll be online. In most cases, libraries just want them put in a different, parents just want them put in a different section where children don't simply walk up to a large display and, you know, grab the book. So we're talking about common sense protection for kids.
Well, you know, the Motion Picture Association of America has their rating system, and it has worked for decades and decades and decades on movies. And I don't see what people are asking for to be any different than that. But
I don't see that it's any difference. And that was the problem with years with the American Library Association and their Bill of Rights. They always maintained that children should have access to all materials, that all materials were age appropriate for children, regardless of how sexual explicit they were. If that is a children's right. So that's just the liberal agenda. That's how far the American Library Association has gone, to think that children's rights come above and beyond the way a parent wants to raise their children. We're talking about parents' rights here. You know, when I raised my kids, my kids didn't have rights. My kids had the rights that I allowed them to have. They, you know, were allowed to read the books that I selected for them or I selected with them. So this idea that children should have access to anything and everything that the American Library Association has promoted for years is nonsense. And that's what so many of our local libraries have believed, because that was the policy that was pushed down to them.
Well, tell me if I missed something here, because I am sure at some point in California, or name your insert your blue progressive area, that they had a discussion. They said, you know what? This is the way we are in our little community here. We want our kids to be exposed to these ideas about sexuality at like six or whatever. And then they had a town hall and they said, this is what we're going to do. And the crazy left wingers out there applauded it and cheered. But I feel like in Alabama, we never would have had that discussion to begin with in a million years. But it just so happens these things were kind of imposed upon us. And we can have
they
a debate.
Yeah. Yes.
We can have a debate about what
system.
We can have a debate about what's appropriate and what isn't, and that could go on forever. But what really bothers me about this more than anything is that we never got the opportunity. You and I, Jane Q, Joe Q, citizen, got the opportunity to talk about this. To like say, hey, we think that a Pride Month display in my public library is wholly appropriate. We need to celebrate this. This is important. We didn't get to have that discussion. We had people who, somebody with a library science degree from the University of Montevallo decide for us that this is the way it's going to be in our public institutions. And I think that's what really rubs a lot of people the wrong way.
And you're exactly right about that, Jeff. The librarians, some of them anyway, because we do have good libraries. Let me just say that we do have some that have protected our kids. But, I have an example right here in North Shelby County where a large display, and I say large because it was 4 feet by 6 feet. I have a picture of a 5-year-old child next to it, and it was towering over the child, and it was full of books that introduced transgender concept to children. I had purchased the books. I have a copy of the books. I've read all the books, and they introduced the concept that a boy could choose whether he wants to be a boy or girl. And that's a topic that most parents did not want their children introduced to. And I received multiple complaints from parents in my district about that. Our other representative received complaints. Our state and county government received complaints. So there was an outpouring of dissatisfaction. And when the members of the community, I'd say there was at least 100 of them, went to the board meeting to express their dissatisfaction, the local board voted to not vote on the issue. They voted to not vote on relocating or removing the display, which seems crazy. How do you vote on not voting for something? But that's what they did because they said the American Library Association would consider that censorship and they cannot make that decision to relocate. So it was just passing the buck. It was just refusing to make a decision. It was coming up with an excuse. And libraries are not going to be able to do that anymore. Not if they follow KIV's guidelines and Dr. Pack's recommendation and want to receive state aid. They are going to have to listen to parents, listen to the communities, and they're going to have to publicly vote on these types of displays. But I think most Alabamians and most parents, once they understand what we're talking about here, would be in complete agreement with what we're talking about.
Well, how about this? A lot of these local governments, the municipal, county, whatever, don't want to get in the middle of this. They don't want to be seen as homophobic or transphobic or whatever the moniker is. Why aren't they concerned about I think the overwhelming majority of their taxpayers or citizens are, and that is they don't want some of the smut in their children's section of their library. I mean, why is the concern with that and not with the consent of the governed, I guess, is something that I think is a big, big problem with a lot of this.
Yeah, and truthfully, it's up to the library board. Again, so you can go complain to your local, for example, in Shelby County, they can go complain to our county commissioners. But our board here was put in place. Gosh, they've been there for forever. They're supposed to be elected. They never have been. They just keep reappointing themselves, and nobody has run. And that's going to change, of course, this year. That library board, I guarantee you, will be contested, and they will all change. But, you're right, though. The county government, the city government, they need to listen to their constituents, and they need to put library members in place. They need to put the pressure, however they may. They don't have to continue to fund these local libraries. That's where the power is for the city and county government. The vast majority of the funds that local libraries get come from local dollars. And we want good libraries. You know, I am not saying let's defund our libraries. I am not saying that at all. We want good libraries with good policy. But the fact of the matter is they do have the power of the purse in these local municipalities because they fund the libraries, and they can put some pressure on them, just like Governor Ivey has done at the state level. They can put pressure on their local libraries. And I think we're going to see that happen, because I don't think the public is going to give up on this. I think they're going to continue to put pressure on the state official. On the local and county officials to make sure we have good board members in place, to make sure we have good library policies in place, and to let them know, look, we do control the power of the purse.
Well, I think for a lot of us, what we'd like to see avoided is some kind of top-heavy solution from you guys in Montgomery. My colleague, Dale Jackson, in radio wants to do you guys just to go crazy and start closing libraries if they don't comply. I don't think anybody thinks that the state of Alabama needs to micromanage community libraries. But there's something just very – they're just not getting the message, though, is I think the problem.
Yeah, and that could be. That really could be. I mean, I personally want strong libraries. I have been we get these education grant checks, and I have been funding our good local libraries. To my Chelsea library, I gave them a $10,000 check from our educational trust fund. I gave money to Leeds Library. I'm about to give a check to Irondale Library, because those are good local libraries. I went in there, I've met with the directors. They didn't have any crazy displays in the children's section. They want a good, healthy library that parents and families can feel free to come to. And so I've rewarded them with more money to help facilitate all that. You know, I want strong libraries. I am not asking to defund them, but if a library cannot listen to its own community, there needs to be pressure put on that library. And you know what? There's lots of ways to compromise in this issue, but that requires listening and having respectful conversations. And, can we talk about just relocating books? Can we talk about, I think Ozark Library, you know, they are doing really good job with age ratings on their books, with certain library cards. If you're 17 and under, you get a certain library card, which only allows you to check out certain books without your parents' permission. So there's lots of creative ways that local library boards and their communities could come up with that everybody can feel comfortable with, as far as children having access and the community having access to a wide variety of topics, whether you agree with them or not.
Representative, we got to leave it there, but so appreciative of your time this morning, and hopefully we can get you on again soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jeff. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. State Representative Susan Dubos there. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Flores Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Flores Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Still to come, Dave Mallory, political consultant, and Patrick McWilliams of the Baldwin County Republican Party. So stick around for that. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the show. Hit us up there. The contrast of reality and the headline on Alabama Political Reporter. Headline, Senate Republicans publicly trounce Tuberville over military holds by my buddy Josh Moon, who, by the way, likes to reside in a glass house and just hurl stones at people. But that's a discussion for later. This is not exactly... what happened? I publicly trounce. It sounds like that's like fan fiction right there. But Josh Moon wants to cast his lot with Lindsey Graham and Joni Ernst, then so be it. I mean, here's what it is, guys. We know his political stripes. And either he's going along with them, or they are, you know, when you get adoration from guys like that, and most of the mainstream media, CNN and MSNBC types, just seal clapping for Dan Sullivan of Alaska and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. It tells you what you need to know, right? Tuberville's doing what he's supposed to. He is representing the wishes of the people of Alabama. The Senate doesn't like it. Then they could change the rules, I suppose, but they don't have the votes to do that. These guys can barely keep the lights on in the federal government. You think they can engineer a workaround on this? I don't think so. I would like to see some of his colleagues be a little more outspoken on this, though. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
The whole world called me Hank. You said, Ripper, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Have you paid?
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
No. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. You know what you love it, the Ascension Technologies text line. Need to get in touch with me. Utilize the text line and we will do our best to respond to whatever it is on your mind. Send a cup, Dave Mallory. That's about 30 minutes from now. He's a political consultant in Montgomery. Sometimes does a little lobbying, but always look forward to having a discussion about what's going on in Alabama politics with him. A very knowledgeable guy, and unfortunately for him, a Georgia fan. Also coming up on the show, Patrick McWilliams out of the Baldwin County Republican Party. We talk every Thursday around that 11 o'clock hour. So stay tuned. Stay right where you are. 251-343-0106. Text me. Let's go through some text here. DP writes, that's why people like to reveal Thrive. They're not in anybody's pockets. Everybody else is looking for the dam. Let's see. On a texture. Important discussion. Thank you. And then we got Don here says, good morning, Jeff. Well, good morning, Don. Apparently there's a lot of ears listening to your show. I pass a truck, wait, a roadblock just north of Selco Road of 43 northbound. Keep up the good works. I do not think it has much to do with yours truly. Now, sometimes I tend to downplay the effectiveness of this show. But no, yesterday we had a big discussion about roads and transportation in this state and enforcement, and somebody brought up an excellent point. And this gets to the question, Senator Elliott, you know, why aren't you doing the permitting? Why are you going through why is the permitting being done through the Corps of Engineers? Well, you know, why isn't this new West Alabama corridor going to be eligible for federal money? It's going to be very expensive. We don't get the 80-20 split. We're going to find 80% federal, 20% local. It's 100% local, which seems not like a very wise financial decision by the state of Alabama to build a 70-mile road that goes from the northern outskirts of Thomasville in lovely Clark County to the northern edge of Moundville, just south of Tuscaloosa, to create this it won't really be Highway 43, it'll be Highway 69 from Thomasville to Moundville. Why were they thinking? Why wouldn't they do it this way? And I believe truck driver texted me on the text line yesterday. It was pretty something I had not thought of. I will get Elliot. Elliot's on tomorrow. I'll ask him about this. That they can drive heavier trucks on this four-lane highway, and they don't have to worry about weight restrictions. If you use federal money, there are weight restrictions. Alabama wants a higher weight limit. And anybody who's driven around the Black Belt on state highways, these two-lane state highways, knows exactly what I'm talking about. We have these logging trucks and these other trucks hauling aggregate or whatever, and their weight, they have so much truck traffic on these roads because there's not a lot of commuter traffic. I mean, who's commuting from Greensboro to Demopolis or whatever, right? But they have these grooves, just these ruts right down the middle of each lane. Two ruts, tire tracks, because of the heavy trucks. And there's obviously no enforcement of any kind of weight limit whatsoever. And they can get away with a lot more weight, a lot more cargo on the truck traffic on the 18-wheelers. By foregoing the federal matching and just doing it themselves. So it's like everything in this state has to be done to please some kind of big business. Am I wrong here? Does it not seem that way sometimes? So this time, you know, like, okay, so big trucks want to wear down the roads. They pay a lot in taxes, diesel taxes and whatnot. Fine. But now let's get to the point where we're not just letting those trucks have their way with our roads. It's we're building highways specifically for them instead of building highways where there are needs, where there's legitimate, where there are, you know, gridlock problems. We got to make sure that we get the Port of Alabama financed, the dredging, and a gas tax bill. We got to build a West Alabama corridor to get goods to market from Tuscaloosa to Mobile. Who's asking for that road? Not really clear. Bobby Singleton, the mayor of Thomasville, Alabama, Sheldon Day, a handful of others. But 9/10 of Alabamians have no idea where this road is. Like if I'm standing before you, and we're in a classroom and you're listening to me, and I say, raise your hand if you could tell me on this map where Marengo County is. Some of you would know, but most people in the state have no idea, and they probably sat in traffic or they've gone down a pothole-ridden state highway somewhere. But we're building this big four-lane highway, and I for whatever, no one's giving me any justification. It's just these people in West Alabama are in Alabama too, and they deserve to get some of the reward of or some of the benefit of being an Alabamian. But there's no way stations in Alabama except for one on I-20, and apparently that's because of a federal mandate because they use federal money to build the road. Why would the federal government insist on states having way stations on their financed highways? Maybe because they don't want the states to use and abuse the interstate system at the behest of big business. And then they have to come in and it's a bad mismanagement of the federal tax dollar. And when the federal government's trying to do the responsible thing and the state isn't, you really got to wonder. But like, how many of us are like civil engineers that really understand all this, the convoluted nature of road projects and road bidding? And it really is just confusing. But it certainly seems like there's just something just not right here. When you're spending $1 billion and you could have built the same road in theory for 20, 30 million or 200, $300 million. And instead, you're foregoing the $700 million savings. Because why? Because you don't want to wait? Or are there other reasons? 251-343-0106. Tim! Jeff, you got to admit it would have been sweet to go in the store and buy a Penthouse or a Hustler when you were in the fourth or fifth grade. Well, apparently, if you want to go to the North Shelby Library, there are dirty books in the children's section, and you can't do a damn thing about it. You like imagine like that network of little fifth graders running around, knowing where the dirty books were. Oh man, raising a kid is tough now with this new wave of progressivism in America. Sad troll Jeff. No, you're absolutely right. Alabama bids right over for big business, just like Congress. It's not to benefit everyone, just those who fund their campaigns. I mean, James, I don't think it's as bad in Congress. At least you have, I'll say this about Congress. Maybe you're right in practice, but at least in the U.S. Congress, there's a handful of members who aren't afraid to get in front of the camera, both right and left, and say, what is going on here? Like, well, Ukraine war, a good example, right? What are we doing? Imagine this. Imagine if funding the Ukraine war were up to the Alabama legislature. And then just stick with me here. Because you see Governor Ivey up on TV saying, you know, we got to fund the Ukraine war because of jobs and getting hardworking Alabamians employed. Like, what? But just like to cater to a special interest and the sort of like weird psychology they try to play on the state to justify some of the weird stuff that they do. Imagine if it were the Ukraine war or anything kind of like you guys that just watch nothing but Fox News and care nothing about national issues. Well, something just crazy. But they could never get away with it. In this state, if you had just a small loyal opposition willing to challenge this like big business orthodoxy that dominates state politics, again, like BCA had their big dinner last night. What do you think a leader of the business and manufacturing did they have to speak? The one and only Trey Gowdy at the Birmingham Sheraton. So, yeah, but that's what it is. It's these guys got to keep them happy. Got to keep Alabamians at work. And look, I'm all for getting out of business's way, rejecting the regulatory state, doing what you got to do to make things a little easier. But we don't have to give everything away. When I'm sitting in traffic on Interstate 65 in bumper-to-bumper traffic between the middle of nowhere and between Clanton and Prattville, and you're wondering, like, this is the middle of nowhere, and there's like a 10-mile traffic jam. Why is that? Well, we should add a lane, or we should do something with 65. It's too congested. Or how about we build another road in the middle of nowhere? And then you come to find out, well, who is this for? And you start thinking about it. And I think there's something to that. A named texture this morning, state troopers were set up just north of Thomasville, just north of Jackson. And in between McIntosh and Leroy and Wayne Truxell's 43. I like that idea. You don't have to build a way to have a building in the way station is movable. But we're so short on state troopers. And I'm not saying that if you had permanent way stations, you wouldn't be short on personnel there either. But like, it's a different class of individual. Those trained in law enforcement, those meant to keep us safe. Those, you know, reckless driving. But instead, they're out performing a task like making sure that trucks are within their weight limit. And I think Alabama needs to be like every other state and have permanent way stations throughout its interstate system and even in some of its U.S. and state highways. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. The text line. Get to those in just a second. So I got a few left. We'll get to this one. We'll clear it out of the way before we get to our next guest, Dave Mallory, who's coming up in the next segment. We'll watch a little MSNBC during the break. GOP blast Tuberville. So five U.S. senators who most of the party disagree with are now the GOP. You see how the framing is here. This is the way the establishment media covering Tuberville is that, the Republican Party is turning on him. He's a crazy man. He must be stopped. The overwhelming consensus is, well, no, that's not how this works, but that's what they want you to believe. It's fun to watch these people try and try and try again to be. They're trying to take the the Biden press shop and the Schumer press shop are forcing out there to get this done. Let's see here, Tim, Jeff, what do you think about all these checks that are coming up and now that were written to Joe Biden? One was from a foreign country. And I'm glad to see it. I was really worried that these findings would dry up under, potentially under a new speaker. I mean, Tom Emmer is your speaker. Are they still hammering away at the Biden investigation, corruption investigation, and the so-called deep state? I'm not surprised to see it. I think we kind of know what was going on here. And I don't know how much overwhelming evidence you need. Media just aren't going to cover it. Biden is their boy. They're not going to make excuses for it. They're not even going to pretend it exists. And the hope, I think, of Jim Jordan and James Comer is to force the media to discussing it, but you have a crowded news cycle. You have a presidential race. You got a shooting in Maine that happened last week. You obviously got Israeli-Palestinian tensions. And this is way down the list. I mean, they'll do 10 segments on January 6th before they go look into what they're up to in Congress investigating Biden. But, Tim, my hope is they have the smoking gun that just forces the media to have to do something here. Unnamed texter, there was always a National Geographic in the library when we were young. But this is different. I mean, like, you want to see, like, topless women in some tribe in Africa is one thing. But, like, some of the books that they are putting on the shelves in some of these libraries in the children's section are, like, very graphic sexual things, like how-to guides and things about if you are a biological male but you feel like a girl, that's okay, you know, like that kind of stuff. That is way outside the mainstream, but it's being treated like it's just an average, everyday, normal occurrence. And look, whatever you want to think of that stuff, accept it, reject it. It's not up to the public library to make that decision. And that's what's going on here. In the public library, guys, Does anybody else see that? I mean, does this sound a little insane? Your library, God bless them. I mean, I'm sure they're doing God's work by making sure books are on the shelves according to their Dewey Decimal number. But the problem is, like, making these important social decisions, these decisions that I think conservatives traditionally make amongst themselves inside their own home at the kitchen table or wherever it may be, the government, an extension of the government is the public library, is doing it for them. So that's what we're trying to get at here. Like, why? I mean, you could say, well somebody's got to do it. Some families don't have somebody to whisper in their kids' ear and say, hey, you're not really a girl, or maybe you are a little girl. Go dress up like a Barbie doll, Johnny. But it shouldn't be the public librarian enabling that discussion. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. My son, it's all left up to you.
I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Ascension Technologies, text line 251-343-0106. About an hour from now, Patrick McWilliams of the Baldwin County GOP, chairman there, will join us. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But joining us now, one of my favorite guests, hails from Montgomery, but you know him as the chairman, Mal, that is. Dave Mallory is with us. Dave, good morning. How are you?
What's up, Jeff? I'm great. You know, it's Thursday mornings are fun because it's like Friday Junior, you know? you can see the weekend coming, at least, you know?
I don't know if this was true for you, Dave, but like, now being like a parent of a two-year-old, I mean, the weekends are in a lot of ways a lot harder than the work week.
It's a little intensive, huh? That's the way that I would say it with younger kids. You know, mine are now like 14 and 11, which is wild because I feel like, you know, and when I started my business and really got into politics, you know, it was my kids were young, like, you know, 2 and 5 or whatever. And, I don't know. It's just one of those things. It changes as you know, as they age or whatever. But it's definitely more intensive on the weekend. You got to find stuff to do or you're stuck in your house, you know?
Yeah, and that's my trick. Like, let mom sleep in and then we'll go somewhere. And there's places to go down here that are different, fun, and amazing.
Right.
So, and then on Sunday you have church. But, like, you got to stay hyper-focused. You know, like, the other day I'm like, so I got my radio studio is in my home. And he's found my headphones and unplugged them. And he's going straight for the electric socket. And I see him just giggling about it. And it's like me in slow motion, like, no. And I'm diving down the hall and grabbing him before he sticks it and plugs it in. Yeah. So I like, why would you ever do that? You know?
Jim, that is a great metaphor for being a political consultant.
Well, you do have to babysit a lot of these people running for office.
Not only have to babysit, but you have to, like, a lot of times they gleefully pursue what we would call bad ideas or ideas that are, you know, sort of deleterious to their future ability to hold office or whatever, like what we were talking about, you know what I mean? Like,
you're posting your erotic fiction. Yeah, people will totally be down with that on the internet.
And no one will notice because it's the internet or something. There's it's hard to find.
I mean, no one would ever recognize me if I'm wearing my wig and dress, would they?
That was just, maybe that was a sign that you should find, you know, something to do. Go to one of those. What's the thing they do at the library? Like the drag thing or you know, like
the drag queen story hour? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, okay.
No, this was a. I mean, this wasn't just like Dr. Seuss books and by the local drag queen. This was some pretty heavy, like Hustler, Larry Flint stuff. I'm afraid.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what's wild, man, is that, like, you know, and not for nothing, and it's like one of those things where, look, we can all say consenting adults and all that stuff, but like Smith Station, I think, is the fastest growing city in, or one of the fastest growing cities in Alabama, certainly in like the region kind of where I live, in the central part of Alabama. And so it's like, you know, you want to, you know, put on as great a face as you can while we're, you know, recruiting industry and, you know, that kind of thing. But there's a lot of growth going that way. And,
yeah,
you know, maybe not the best look.
It's a lot of military and a lot of, you know, the growth of Auburn and Opelika, and it's just an affordable place. You know, they have these, you know, garden home communities or whatever, good starter homes. And I believe, because we did our homework on this story. By the way, 1819 News, 1819news.com, if you want to read about the drag queen or the transgender, I'm not sure what the proper terminology is, mayor, but anyway, and Dave, the Baptist preacher, by the way, the First Baptist Church of Phoenix City, the lead pastor there. I don't know what Baptist doctrine says about this behavior, but that's not for me to judge. But like, it's one of the fastest growing places, and I was, you know, we did a little homework, and this is the fourth largest high school in Alabama is Smith Station.
Mm-hmm.
7A.
I did not know that.
I did not know it either.
I knew it was like this fast growing kind of veteran community that people didn't really know about or whatever. But I mean, that's just, and like, I don't know, the fact that you said that, like, you know, it's like, oh, I didn't think anybody would notice or care is like kind of an odd way of thinking in whatever year this is, 2023.
And the guy owned it, but he's like, oh, I was just doing it at us and trying to be humorous or something. Like, no. No.
Right.
This is not going to work, man.
Yeah. Maybe not.
What
else is going on in Alabama politics?
Well, that's what we got you on. I'm really intrigued about the second congressional district right there, and you're in the heart of it. But guess what? It turns out my listening audience, a big share of it, will be voting in the same election, the same primary, as you guys in Montgomery and as our friends in Smith Station in Phoenix City, apparently, too, or parts of Smith Station. I think some of that's in the third.
That's right.
So very pertinent to a lot of this. And you look at it, Brubaker's supposed to announce today, if he hasn't already. You got three Democrat candidates. You got Bracey from down here. You got Kirk Hatcher from your neck of the woods. And then you got, as of yesterday, Jeremy Gray, the legislator from Opelika. So, this is a Frankenstein district. This is a really tough one for me to understand. And what do you need to do to win? What do you make of this? How do you win the second congressional district?
Well, I mean, that's a loaded question. You know, I wish I could say it was as simple as hiring me, but, you know, it's geographically diverse. It's what's the word, thought diverse or whatever, because, you know, like, look, you and I know this, and we can say this type of thing out loud, Jeff, and that is that, like, people from Mobile are just kind of different from people in Montgomery or people in the Wiregrass. And I don't mean that from like the, you know, that's from like a grass tops and a grassroots, you know, thing, and the things that they want and need are different, which is why the communities of interest, you know, argument was so pertinent. That they kind of lost, you know, that they lost on when they ruled all these districts. But, like, you know, I'll tell you what it's going to take. It's going to take a lot of money, and it's going to take somebody who's, you know, has a nimble kind of mind and a nimble campaign apparatus. And, you know, somebody who, like, you know, can harness the whatever it is, you know, because it's like there's really two races, right? Because there'll be a Republican primary. And there will be probably a more contested and longer and sort of sloggier version on the Democrat side. And then it's like, you know, who can put all of that back together in the general? And then it's like, you know, but everybody wants to know, like, you know, what are the parties from Washington, you know, going to do in terms of their participation? And, you know, I tell everybody that asks me, I said, they're going to look at it in like late August and decide that from, you know, it, like from Labor Day on, whether they need to invest or not on both sides. And that doesn't have anything to do with like the underlying whatever of the district. That has everything to do with like control of Congress. And, you know, does it show that, you know, on the, you know, does it show that this person can win? I was told this week that, you know, that essentially the Democrats in Washington are, you know, will spend whatever they can to win it. And it's a question as to whether, you know, the Republican apparatus will be involved or not. And to that, I say they'll be involved if they think they can win.
You know, it's kind of
a long way of not answering your question, though.
Well, like, you look at tactics. Something else kind of fascinating to me. It said this district, Mobile, Montgomery, and Columbus, Georgia media markets.
And Columbus, Georgia media market.
How much do you spend in Columbus, Georgia, if any?
I'll tell you this. If you look at it, right, well, if one of the markets is essentially Mobile and Montgomery, the media markets are kind of equal. Mobile has actually about 10% more, which kind of surprised me, in the media market. But weirdly enough, not Montgomery County is whole, so we have sort of more people. But I think the Columbus media market could be the key to winning it, because it's one of those things where, you know, the TV is not cheap, as we all know, and it's no longer sort of the number one driver of like voter vote share, but it's a good sort of, placeholder for like what you have to spend. And here's the other thing, Jeff, is that I kind of have this thing about like the tactic wise, that's going to be able to figure out, but you have to be the type of campaign that raises the type of money and understands that the Columbus market is where you can sort of run up the score in that 10% or whatever and can win it, and not be like, well, you know, we're just going to try to get on, you know, Mobile TV or Montgomery a little bit, and sort of we're just going to let that sort itself out, because that's loser talk, right? And so, like, one of the keys to winning is just like is being a winner and knowing what it takes to win in terms of like money and I guess like swagger, maybe is the word. And I think it's going to be interesting on the Democratic side, because you have a lot of competing interests that sort of have the same, I would say, sort of belief system and same like finance structure of their campaign. And they're going to be going after the same donors. And I just, you know, and I, like, I was told that Anthony Daniels is going to run, which I think is kind of wild, because I think he can soak up money, but like, is anybody really going to, you know, how is he going to, you know, how's he going to shore up support when, you know, the first question that people are going to ask is like, isn't your district in Huntsville?
Yeah. Well, what are the people in Huntsville going to say when he comes back and he loses? And like, well, what were you doing down there, man? I mean, it's very risky for him to run for Congress like this, I think.
I totally agree. I told somebody, I said, you know, like, the thing is that, yeah, like, it's a free shot, air quotes, but like, if you come down here, you tell people how much you love Bullitt County in this area, and then the next thing you know, you're like coming back to Mobile to try to, I'm sorry, get back to Huntsville to try to get, you know, them, hey, I was just kidding about all that, I'm cool up here, right? Like, that's not necessarily a good look. And so, and frankly, it seems to me that he might be a little, you know, I guess maybe we ascribe people some savvy that a lot of times that, I'm not saying it's not savvy, but I just, it's a move fraught with peril. Essentially, to me, I would say, if you're going to get in it, you have to win it, or you're probably not going to, be, you know, representing your actual House district much longer after that. But who knows? Well, who knows if that's part of his plan, you know?
Let me ask you this. What would you make of Stephen Reed not running?
It's wild, huh? I don't really know what to make of it, and I don't have any real insight into his decision making, you know, except for that, like, you know, look, there's a lot of ways to read the tea leaves, right? One of them might be that, like, he doesn't think it's as winnable a shot for the Democrat. One of them might be that, you know, he feels like he has, I don't know, unfinished business at the city level. One of them might be that, like, gosh, would you, you know, he does have pretty young kids, you know, my kids' ages, I think, you know, because I told Dick Brubaker, I said, look, here's the thing about it. If, you know, it's a slog, and it's not necessarily on the Republican side, you know, getting the nomination isn't a guarantee that you're going to come within, you know, 8 points or whatever of winning it. But then if you do run the type of campaign, which he would run, you know, a modern sort of sophisticated campaign that would know how to win. So let's say that he looks up and wins it. Then you got to be in Congress. And, you know, maybe Stephen Reed thinks like, hey, you know, at least at the mayor's office, I can make some damn decisions that people, you know, actually listen to me on. Pardon me, dang decisions.
I think that one's allowable. You know, but about the Brubaker thing, he's got to run. I think he could do well down here. I think this is going to be important if you're a Montgomery candidate or a Mobile candidate. Very how you do, important. Yeah. And can you do well in as a Mobile candidate in Montgomery? But I tell you what, like I have him on the show regularly, and he's one of the favorite guests.
Well, yeah, because he has an easy sort of I don't want to say easy to define in terms of like his beliefs, but he believes them and can easily communicate that to you and why. And I think one of the things about Dick that he's like, you know, that's underestimated a lot of times is that he's just feisty. You know, he was a high school wrestler and wrestling coach, and you know, he kind of knows. You wouldn't look at him and think, because in Montgomery every time he's run, people have been like, I'm not going against that buzzsaw, right? But he is, you know, a phenomenally successful, you know, car dealer and all that. And so he knows his way around the business thing, and on the issues that, you know, people would care about, he's probably closer to the district than somebody that's going to, you know, essentially want that dude we were talking about earlier as their running mate. You know what I mean? Well, so, I don't even have running mates for Congress, but you know what I mean, right? But
yeah.
Like, think about, here's the thing. I'll give you a scenario, Jeff. And this is not saying this is going to happen, but there's like, what I like to do is plan for all eventualities. And there is a scenario where the Democrats sort of fight it out on national Democratic issues and start talking about who's, you know, more this and who's more woke or whatever. And, you know, tack so far to the left that they turn off, you know, a lot of their natural constituents. And then, as I was told, you know, last night, I went to this event, and one of the guys that was there was talking about how Trump being on the ballot skews the polling. And so it's hard because if you look at the number of people who vote in normal elections, it's like totally normal. And then if you take out 2016 and 2020, like turnout patterns are very discernible. But when you add those in, there's a sizable number of people on both sides that only come out to vote when Trump's on the ballot. And so, like, how do both sides manage that? You know, like, it's easy to say that the Democrats are going to be against him, but like, what does that look like, and how hard and how nationalized is the race and things like that? Because I don't think that nationalizing the race and, you know, and the Dem side having to, you know, defend, you know, Biden's age and infirmness or whatever, is going to be a winning message for them. And, you know, of course, they're going to try to attack Trump on the other side. But what we've seen in a lot of these districts that are closely divided like this is that, strangely enough, it, like, the division creates the avenue for more partisanship or harder partisanship. And what I mean by that is that the Republicans in a lot of these districts, when they win them, Trump drives the turnout on their side and they win. And so I'm not saying that, like, I'm not making a prediction. I'm not in the prediction business. But when you drill down on the district, it's a little less Democratic than the top lines would lead you to believe.
Dave, we got to leave it there. We're out of time. I guess we spent too much talking about a mayor transgender, but maybe next time we'll keep it.
Is it possible to talk too much about mayor transgender? I'm just asking.
We did fail to mention Georgia Bulldog football.
I know.
I apologize.
I got one plug in. We won. Georgia beat Florida for the third straight year by 20 plus points for the first time ever. So, stay, you know, maybe Florida State will be there too, bud.
I don't know. Anyway, got to get out of here. Thanks, Dave. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Counting flowers on the wall. That don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo.
nothing to do.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. Patrick McWilliams of the Baldwin County Republican Party coming up in the next segment. So I make sure you stay tuned for that. I also keep the text coming. We do appreciate the feedback. But the second congressional district, guys, from Mobile to Georgia, sort of the crescent, if you will, Republican-wise, I don't know how many Democrats are listening to this show. My guess is you guys in this listening area are going to go with, if you're a Democrat voting, Napoleon Bracey, the hometown guy. And I think the Democrat primary is going to be mostly decided along the lines of sort of geographic loyalty. But the Republican primary is interesting in this. We don't necessarily have a Mobile candidate yet, and I don't know who that would be. No one seems to be interested, at least right now. We will have a Montgomery candidate if we don't already, and former State Senator Dick Brubaker. Would you get one from East Alabama, the Auburn Opelika area? I don't know. Maybe we do have some kind of, I think what I'd say, very second tier candidate, but nobody that would name ID that you would recognize. So, watch that in the coming days. Can you get behind Dick Brubaker? Is that your cup of tea? I mean, loyal listeners, you're very familiar with him. He's been on coming on my program since I came here in, 2020? As a regular. So anyway, we can have that discussion and others in the next hour. So stay right where you are. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
And it probably always will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair.
From Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. Get in touch with the program, utilize the text line, and that's I will respond to you. We got a bunch of texts to get to here. I'll get to those in just a moment. Still to come on the program, we got Patrick McWilliams of the Baldwin County GOP, so stay tuned for that. A quick mention here, presidential politics. DeSantis is on the ropes here. There's no question about it, and I don't know if there's a path for him. Rick Scott just endorsed Donald Trump, his the U.S. senator from his state. What if Donald Trump is convicted of whatever one of these bogus crimes are? Let's say he is convicted. Do you still vote him to be the party standard bearer in 2024? DeSantis took that question this morning on MSNBC with the Sad Morning Joe crew, and he said he didn't think that your guys in the Republican Party, Republican voters, would vote for him if he is convicted. Not only for president, but the not even the nomination. So I don't know what DeSantis is getting at here, but well, I do know. I mean, he was asked a question, and they like it when the candidates snipe at each other, especially one of those candidates is Donald J. Trump. But it got me thinking, is he right? Does that hurt Trump? I mean, obviously he's not asking for that, but so far what we see, guys, haven't we... Every time one of these legal hurdles is thrown out there in front of Trump's presidential campaign, he goes up in the polls. Why is he defying gravity? Does he ever come back down to earth? And polls are polls. Is that really going to translate into votes? And that remains to be the question. Let me know what you think. 251-343-0106. 06, that's the Essentia Technologies text line. Let's see here. Jerry, Jeff, what do you think about... Oh, that's not... Jeff, please help me understand exactly who the Americans, the news media, keep talking about being stuck in Gaza. Are they talking about the kidnapped people or something else? No, so Jerry... They say, what, 100 or so Americans are stuck in Gaza? And, you know, we do missionary work there, contractors, humanitarian work. You know, people that are American citizens do deeply care about the plight of the so-called Palestinians in Gaza. And they got stuck there. I mean, no one knew this... this ordeal was about to happen. And when they shut down the border, everything goes into like really, really uber protective mode. Probably the big one, because the northern border of Gaza is a war zone. People are trying to get out through the southern border, which on two sides, it is Israel. On one side, it's the Mediterranean Sea. And on the south side, it's Egypt. And there's only one crossing from Egypt into Gaza, and the Egyptians and Hamas aren't letting hardly anyone through. So but that's what they're talking about, and it's difficult to get those people out. Fire Dog with an important question here, I see. If I put on the wig and the dress, it costs extra. Larry, Jeff, your job as a parent for the first 5 years of your child's life is to keep them from doing stupid stuff that will kill them. In return, the life that you give them sucks it from you. Larry with the a positive outlook there. John, Jeff, this is a trucker. I got a lot to say here. When it comes to commercial trucks, you need someone with a Department of Transportation to come up on and explain the regulations we have to follow. We're only allowed 8,000 pounds on interstates and up to 90,000 pounds on U.S. highway routes and less restricted to less than 56,000 pounds. This is for log trucks, chips, dirt haulers, and other heavy hauling trucks. As for portable weighing stations, they sit up in regular places safely to pull all loaded trucks over and do this twice a week in a lot of areas all over the state. And they are not common state troopers. They are specifically training to wait and inspect commercial trucks. He continues, I hope this helps you understand a little bit better. Oh, and they know if you come out of your neighboring state across the state line scale, you are already legal in our state. The laws are federal. Also, other states do the same thing and have problems with ruts in their back roads. Sorry, so long text, but it's not as simple as you tell it on your show. I've been driving. Well, I mean, I'm just observing here, like, why I think there's just heavy trucks going up and down the road, and the state's kind of accommodating this. State of Alabama thinks we need to build roads for heavy trucks, but the federal government does not agree with that. And that's why not only do you have, so back to this whole West Alabama corridor thing is where this comes from. And we found out that the permitting they were doing was not the traditional Federal Highway Administration approach. It was like, why are they using the Army Corps of Engineers? And the obvious answer was, well, it's faster. It's a permitting process. It's faster. They could get it done faster. They want to get this road built before Governor Ivy Lee's office, because the next governor, who is likely to be Will Ainsworth, won't be finishing it, or he may not finish it, or he may discontinue it. He may have this four-lane road that dead ends in the middle of Hale County somewhere. But the other thing that was brought to my attention was, well, they don't permit it the traditional way, then they could haul heavier trucks up and down this road. When you use federal money, the federal government expects you to keep limits on the loads, and it just occurs to you, or to me at least, this is a state that is very lax in its enforcement of weight limits. And I know y'all were saying that they're doing this up Highway 43 with these portable scales, but I still can't help but wonder why Alabama is like one of the only states you ever go to without weigh stations. There's one weigh station in Alabama, and it's on I-20 between Birmingham and the state line, the Georgia state line. That's it. But why are they doing the permitting in West Alabama this way? Yeah, they're doing it because they want these heavy trucks to haul those logs up and down to the sawmill. And then whatever, the wood pellets, maybe they float them down to Tom Bigby River, or maybe they send them down Highway 43 to the port and on to wherever they go. And they just don't want to deal with the weight limits on the road. I'm retired Army. It's from a texture. The leave being used for abortion is medical leave. It doesn't count against the 30-day/year of regular leave service members accrue every year. Essentially, if I'm granted the time off for an abortion, it costs me nothing. It's the same as if I require a regular medical procedure for an on-duty injury, but that procedure will be done, or the procedure isn't done by any doctor in the area. My assigned duty station. Also, after returning from time off, I will be on limited duty for a period of time prescribed by the doctor. Well, okay, I mean, that's fine. And then you could say that, you know, medical attention has to be done through this sort of arrangement. When somebody dies in their family, do you get that same kind of arrangement? You get leave, but it counts against you, right? So... Why abortion? Why of all medical procedures is elective? It's elective abortion. Unnamed texter. There would be consequences, I believe, and I don't know regarding what. Sam, why not Joe Biden should have at least been charged, if not convicted? The crimes that Biden is involved in are real. Yeah, well, I mean, the day is young. Who knows what lies ahead for President Biden? But I don't think he's in a good place at all, if you ask me, with his corruption scandal. Toothless Bamber, have you ever heard of a 75-year-old who had never been in trouble with the law? Have over 91 federal charges, 4 different locations. And then Jason... Is there not a way station on I-10 at the Mississippi-Alabama state line? Maybe just not open. Yeah, that's what I think it is. Well, I don't go that way. It seems like, my recall, there's one before you get into Alabama. I haven't been that way, but like maybe twice in the last 2 years. I don't make many trips to the Mississippi Gulf Coast and or New Orleans these days. I'm waiting for the choo-choo train. The choo-choo train is going to solve all our problems, and we won't need roads, and it won't matter what the weight limit is, because everybody's going to be riding Amtrak. Ben says, took the state damn near 4 years to replace 2 bridges on Highway 5. They've been widening Highway 81 for the damn near 20 years. Kay Ivey's great-great-great-grandchild will be governor before they finish the West Alabama corridor. They're trying their darndest here to fast track it. I'm surprised there's no Delta Smelt or something, some kind of tree frog or beach mouse or something that is going to slow down the West Alabama corridor. Where are my hyper environmentalists? Why aren't they like, hey, you can't build that road here because of the endangered species, the spotted squirrel of North Marengo County. It's an endangered species, and we have to do something about the spotted squirrel. We have to stop this road right now. 251-343-0106. Come up here shortly. Patrick McWilliams. Something else, a little programming note. I talked about this a little earlier. Tomorrow on the program, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, backed by popular demand, I suppose, a regular fixture on this show, April Murray Fogle, just trying to get back in the Alabama game, I hear. And our good buddy, and we'll talk to him about this tomorrow, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion. But are they trying to do an end around here? I mean, is this one of the objectives? If you have a bunch of federal money go toward the West Alabama corridor instead of state money, does that force the state to have to impose a lighter load restriction on the highway? And that's why they don't want to do it. Because, like I said, you know what goes on in the Black Belt? I mean, there's a lot of things being hauled from point A to point B. But, which is fine and all, but the problem is, they're spending $1 billion on a road to West Alabama when they can be spending $1 billion elsewhere where it's needed. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Bad ideas. It's life in Dixie with these Alabama blues.
Cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it.
Song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Jeremy Gray of AL.com tweeting this, quote, Ron DeSantis, I think fighting back on the Pentagon going outside the boundaries of the law, I think that's Congress's appropriate role. That's from DeSantis on Tuberville, who is getting all the media attention this morning nationally. And let me tell you what's going on here. You're going to see a lot of Tuberville. But what's going on is the Schumer and Biden and whoever else media machine are really trying. They want Tuberville to fold. If Tuberville folds, it's a significant thing, but he's not. I don't think they get it though. Like Tuberville, you could maybe pressure him from within his constituency in Alabama, but there's no way he is going to cave to the likes of Lindsey Graham or Joni Ernst or the backbencher from Alaska. I mean, just like that's not going to work. But we can make it look like the Republicans are rebelling against their own in Tuberville. And right now in this presidential cycle, it's a fool's errand for them to think they can go to these presidential candidates. And maybe they'll get like a Nikki Haley to bite, or they could go find a Nancy Mace or one of those type of Republicans. But generally speaking, you're not going to get like a Marsha Blackburn or any of these like kind of the figures or conservative quote unquote figures in the Republican Party to speak ill of Tommy Tuberville. Some of them I think would say, "Hey, man, just let it go," but publicly they may say that. Privately they may say that. Publicly they're telling us what a great American he is. Unnamed texter writes, you're correct. Leave taken from a family member does not count against earned leave. I was by no means defending Austin's policy. By the way, I am with Coach Tuberville on this. That's Tom and Pritchard. Dirt digger. Jeff, the U.S. government would stop the West Alabama corridor because of the endangered black belt polecat, a.k.a. skunk. It stinks spending ale gas tax money on it. I like that. I would get behind the Alabama, West Alabama, or the black belt polecat. What would the Latin on that one be there, Dirt Digger? And then a named texter says, I agree with Tuberville. But I think that's the point here. Like, you're not going to get to him with Lindsey Graham being all angry. It is going to take a lot more than that. And you can do segment after segment after segment. Look, we're so myopically focused on ourselves, domestic politics, and so on. What's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in Gaza, has little to do with what Tommy Tuberville is doing with his holds, okay? I mean, a tenuous, very tenuous link. That is such a, trying to make that case is kind of silly. The same with Ukraine or whatever. But what also they're missing is, with the Pentagon just goes back to its previous policy on abortion, Tuberville drops the holds. I don't understand why that's not, no one raises that point. I did hear Sullivan in his speech yesterday. We know we're not going to get the Biden administration to move on this, so you need to be the bigger man here. Like, screw you, man. Why do Republicans like to abandon the things that make up the Republican Party because of, like, mainstream media conventional wisdom is beyond me. But look what we ceded ground on, and we're ceding ground on entitlement spending. They've won the culture war on marriage. Every wedge issue that the Democrat Party throws at Republicans, they cave. They absolutely cannot cave on protecting the rights of the unborn. Then you might as well, uniparty, here we come. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Ford Show at FM Talk 106.5.
You work a 40-hour week for a living. Send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Want to be in touch with the show, text me. We still got a little time here before the conclusion of today's program. Let's see. Let me get these before we get to our guest here. Leo, don't forget, they can still process those officers if they want to do one at a time. Yeah, and they have not. They don't want to do that. I think they could do that, and it would suck for them, and there'd be a lot of. That's not the argument. That's not the point. It's just a matter of, like, they don't want to be seen as ceding anything to this crazy redneck from Alabama, and that's.